That was the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world.
That was the year. Within the majestic, time-honored walls of the British House of Lords, January 21.
His Majesty King George.
It is with sincere satisfaction that I am present here to welcome the delegates of the five principal naval powers assembled for the object of eliminating the evil results of wasteful naval armaments. Every nation represented here is proud of its navy.
Rising from his golden throne, George V of England welcomes the delegates of Great Britain, France, Italy, Japan, and the U.S., attending the so-called London Five Power Naval Conference, met ostensibly to discover means, make agreements to reduce armaments. As the revered monarch concludes, he makes what seems today an ironic statement.
All efforts advanced beyond that point have failed. I earnestly trust that the result of this conference will lead to an immediate alleviation of the heavy burden of armaments now weighing upon the peoples of the world.
1930, that was the year.
The White House, Washington, D.C., Monday, February 3.
I have just received from the hands of his son the resignation of William H. Taft as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I am accepting this resignation because I am fully aware of the ill health which Justice Taft has been suffering for some time.
Thus did President Herbert Hoover announce the long-expected resignation of rotund, jovial William Howard Taft. 5 days later, in a quiet, unpretentious home on Wyoming Street.
Mrs. Taft. Mrs. Taft.
Yes, Dr. Fuller.
I have some bad news for you.
I am quite prepared.
Mr. Taft has just taken a turn for the worse. Stroke.
Oh, I'll go in to him.
Shortly after, a bulletin appeared.
The former Chief Justice died at 5:15 p.m. A sudden change in his condition occurred at 4:45 p.m., from which he failed to rally. Signed, H.G. Fuller, M.D.
Soon, homage was being paid the memory of the only man in the history of the U.S. to hold the two highest offices in the land, President and Chief Justice. Diplomats of foreign nations, cabinet members, members of Congress, President and Mrs. Hoover, justices of the Supreme Court, all offered reverential respect to the grand old man they had all loved. All save one, Supreme Court Justice Terry Sanford, who had preceded his chief in death by only 5 hours.
1930, that was the year.
Mexico City, February 5.
All right, tell us now. What is your name?
Do not hit me, senor. I will tell you. It is Daniel Flores.
That is better. Now tell us, why did you try to kill El Presidente Rubio, Senora Rubio, and the niece?
Try to kill them. They are not dead?
No, they are only painfully wounded, lucky for you. Why did you do it?
Because I was a supporter of Jose Vasconcelos in the election. Because I wanted him to win. Because I hate Ortiz Rubio. Because I wanted him to die. Viva Vasconcelos!
His left jawbone shattered by a bullet from the would-be assassin's gun, his wife and niece slightly wounded, Ortiz Rubio was driven madly through the gathering throng by his driver, Felix Galvin, hero of the near tragedy. Galvin, severely wounded by one of the six bullets, stuck to his post until the president and his party were cared for at a Red Cross hospital. From his inauguration to the time of attack, Rubio had enjoyed the position of president of the Republic of Mexico for only 2 hours.
1930, that was the year.
Roosevelt Field, New York, April 20, about 10 minutes before midnight.
Come on, boys, let's meet him.
Hello, Colonel.
How are you, Colonel? How are you, Mr. Lindbergh?
Well, I guess that's a record, Colonel Lindbergh.
Yes, by 3 hours, 16 minutes, and 6 seconds.
Say, you've been keeping close watch, haven't you?
Mrs. Lindbergh has.
Oh, I see. Shall we call Mrs. Lindbergh the co-pilot?
Well, use your own judgment. Come on, Ann.
Flipping more than 3 hours from the previous record of Frank M. Hawks for a west-to-east transcontinental flight, Charles Augustus Lindbergh and his wife, Anne Morrow Lindbergh, displayed their usual reticence toward publicity. A little more than a month later, May 27, at Glendale, California, Colonel Roscoe Turner roared into the Grand Central Airport to break another record of Frank Hawks, set 3 years previously. Turner sheared 26 minutes and 58 seconds from Hawks' time for the east-to-west transcontinental flight.
Curtis Field, Long Island, August 13th.
This was the day for Frank Hawks. After making 3 stops at Albuquerque, Wichita, and Indianapolis, Hawks landed his plane at Curtis Field, leaned out to the judges and cried...
What was the elapsed time?
12 hours, 25 minutes, and 3 seconds.
Now, that's great. I've beaten it again.
Yeah, and you beat the Lindbergh's record by more than 2 hours.
Yeah, that's great.
Say, Frank, weren't you a little superstitious about this flight?
Superstitious? What are you talking about?
Well, the name of your plane is Texaco 13. Your Department of Commerce number is 1313, and this is the 13th day of the month.
Oh, I get it. But don't forget... It didn't take me 13 hours to make the trip.
When informed of his shattered record, said Lindbergh...
I'm certainly glad to hear it. I think it is a fine thing that he brought the time record down. I will offer my congratulations to Captain Hawks at the first opportunity.
1930, that was the year.
Cardington, England, July 29. With ideal weather conditions favoring a speedy voyage... The British dirigible R-101 took through the air, headed for St. Hubert Field, Montreal, Canada, carrying 44 persons in food sufficient for 5 days. 76 hours, 15 minutes later, the great ship reached her destination, severely damaged by a storm of terrific force that she encountered just 180 miles from Montreal. Repaired, the R-101 returned to England, where on October 4 she took off again, this time for Beauvais, France. Battling a gale blowing off the English Channel, within 5 miles of a destination, the R-101 suddenly dropped earthward with a sickening lurch and exploded. Ah! 46 of the 53 passengers and crew met death. Among them, Lord Christopher Birdwood Thompson, 1st Baron of Cardington and Air Minister of the Labour Government. Reported H.J. Leach, engineer, on the staff of the ill-fated air monster.
We crashed on top of a hill. There was no warning. As the airship lurched toward Earth, it burst into flames and then crashed.
1930, that was the year. Osvik, Norway, August 31.
From out the barren white wastes of the Arctic today, arose the specter of a 33-year-old tragedy. On June 11, 1897, Solomon August Andre and two companions, Niels Strindberg and Knut Frankel, set out from Dane Island, Spitsbergen, to discover the North Pole in a balloon. On August 31, 1930, Dr. Gunnar Horn returned with a startling revelation.
I have on my ship, the Bratvag, the bodies of André and his two comrades. There was every indication about the camp that the lives of the three explorers were but of short duration after they reached White Island.
1930, that was the year...
that Mahatma Gandhi began another of his civil disobedience campaigns, was arrested and imprisoned at Yerode, India.
That was the year?
That for the 80th consecutive year, a yacht registered as owned by a citizen of the U.S. won the coveted America's Cup when Mike Vanderbilt's Enterprise shattered a 29-year-old record by 3 minutes, 5 seconds. After the fourth heat, sadly remarked the owner of the Shamrock Fifth, Sir Thomas Johnstone Lipton,
I shall never challenge again.
1930, that was the year.
Addis Awa, Abyssinia, November 4.
With this holy oil I anoint thee, Rastafari Makonnen, and proclaim to all men that thou art Emperor, Lord King of Kings of Ethiopia, conquering Lion of the tribe of Judah, the elect of God, the light of the world. By this crown I give unto thee a sign that thou hast become Emperor Haile Selassie I.
Amid the ancient pomp of a Coptic religion, the 39-year-old prince for 14 years, regent of Abyssinia, claiming descent from the union of King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba, was made emperor of that wild land at a cost of $3 million. While 25,000 tribesmen partook of the delicacies, raw meat and edge, wine made from fermented honey flavored with herbs, the high priest danced before the dome church, danced in rhythmic gyration to the sound of tinkling cymbals, drums, and the low chants of the dark-skinned tribespeople. And while diminutive Haile Selassie gazed fondly upon these wonders handed down to him and his people from ancient Egypt, those of us enjoying our more modern civilization also danced. Danced in rhythmic gyration too.
I got rhythm. Oh, ho, ho. I got music. I got trouble, but I don't mind you.
I got rhythm.
I got rhythm. I got music. I got mine, and who could ask for anything more? I got Daisy in Green Pasture. I got my land, who could ask for anything more?
Oh, my trouble, I don't mind it. You won't find it
hanging round my fella back door.
I got starlight, I got teaching. I got my man.
Who could ask for anything more? Who could ask for anything more? I got rhythm, I got music, I got my gal, ta-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I got daisies in green pastures, I got my gal, who could ask for anything more? I got starlight, I got sweet dreams, I got my gal, who could ask for anything more? Who could ask for anything more?